Welcome to the Healthcare Consultants Podcast, brought to you by the Chicago Health Law and Professional Licensing Firm of Michael V. Fabia and Associates. This is your host, Nick Augustine, and today our guest is Nellie Vasquez Rowland from A Safe Haven in Chicago. She is the co-founder and president of A Safe Haven in Chicago. She and her husband have pulled more than 130,000 people up from homelessness, and her new book is all about the success stories. In this episode of the Healthcare Consultants Podcast, Nellie talks about the success of A Safe Haven's transformational and sustainable approach to overcoming homelessness and excelling in life. Let's say good afternoon to Nellie Vasquez Rowland.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nellie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, I'm looking forward to helping you share and spread the word of success when so much that we see in the world doesn't seem to reach the success point. So we're talking about overcoming not only homelessness, but the opioid addiction problems and epidemic, and you have a very special way of doing it. So let's start off. Tell folks who might not be aware of who A Safe Haven is or what you all do, tell us a little bit about the organization, why it was founded, and the goal.
Well, Nick, the reason why A Safe Haven was founded was because back in 1994, my husband and I had overcome challenges in our own lives, and we were working in the field of finance, and we're fortunate to have gotten into careers that provided so well for us and our family. And we realized that there were so many people who did not have the opportunity to overcome those challenges like we did. So we started looking at the issue specifically of substance abuse, which was something our family dealt with. And we knew that back then it was actually declared a disease in the 50s. Yet society at the time in 1994 was making very draconian decisions in terms of what people we were going to do as a society with people that were suffering from these issues. And believe it or not, we were passing laws that were really making the laws stronger to incarcerate more people that were suffering from those types of underlying issues. So that led us down the path of doing more research and trying to understand what was going on in the world of philanthropy and what was going on in the world of public policy and ideas and how we can address actually these situations in a way that was truly going to heal and connect the dots to get people access to the right services so that they can be put on a path to independence. And Nick, believe it or not, we never found any path that was laid out for achieving self-sufficiency. We saw a lot of wonderful, well-intended ideas, but for us, although they were meeting an immediate need, such as food and public housing and SNAP dollars to help feed your family, we couldn't find where we can connect the dots for people so that ultimately they can start supporting themselves and their own families and become positive, productive members of society. So we realized that we had to do something in a way that was going to, I guess, appease our values, right, and our vision. So we started investing in properties that were abandoned in distressed communities in the Chicagoland area. And instead of turning around and renting these beautiful properties that we had recently renovated, we decided to furnish them and invite people that were in crisis to live there. And we also decided to hire some people to help them with each of their unique situations and help them get to where they needed to go and help them achieve their highest level of potential. And nobody was really thinking about following through that way. And we thought it was needed. So that's how we got started. And here we are 26 years later, Nick, and today we actually do the same thing for over 5,000 people a year. And beyond people that are suffering from substance abuse, we help people that are suffering from domestic violence issues, from, coming out of the juvenile justice system or the criminal justice systems, and people in general that have just lost their jobs, and including families that need a place to stay. And finally, let's not forget, with something that's very near and dear to our hearts, is our military veterans who come home oftentimes with nowhere to go. And my husband was one of them. So that's why, our model is really unique in terms of how we've vertically integrated all of these services and coordinate them in a way that's unique to every individual. And we know that if we're doing it for 5,000 people a year, we can do it for many, many more.
It's just the numbers, when you talk about thousands of people, really think about what that is and what that means. At what point, after starting this in 1994 and growing it, at what point did it just take off to where you all just kind of looked at each other and said, oh my goodness, how are we going to handle this?
Well, it took off from day one. I mean, in terms of the number of pent-up demand individuals that were out there in desperate need of a place to go where they can start over and a place to bring their children and feel comfortable. So since day one, we realized we had a tiger by the tail, and we said, now how are we going to harness this in a way that's going to allow us to get the funding to help scale it? So my husband and I just started doing this with our own, you know, investment dollars, and we invited some investors to join us, and we were able to build capacity. But after 5 years of doing this on our own, we realized that we needed to actually figure out a way to get funded. The demand was much more that was, you know, than we can meet with our own resources. So we realized that first thing we needed to do is get a study done. So we actually went to Northwestern University, and they actually took on the challenge of doing an 18-month study in our program. And it got published in the American Journal of Public Health back in 1999. And what they said was that our model was one of the most comprehensive and successful models they had ever seen. And back in those days, you know, we were just a mere fraction of what we are today. But they had written that we had over a 280% success rate over the national average. So we knew that this was something that needed to be scaled. And since then, with the study, we were able to get contracts with the state of Illinois, with the Department of Corrections, Department of Children and Family Services, with the city of Chicago, with Cook County jail systems, with the, you know, with the VA, for example. So that's what happened. I mean, we really are, you know, at a tipping point. You mentioned earlier, you know, about the homeless problem and what's happening. It is, we are at a tipping point. The good news is, for the very first time in history, we do have the federal government, you know, with what's happened with the pandemic, it's become crystal clear that homelessness is a public health issue. Every city in America, major city in America, is challenged with this issue of the growing homeless epidemic. And I believe it's a national emergency. And I believe now that the federal government is committing to put investment dollars into building capacity to help the homeless and affordable housing, I think it's just, you know, super important that, you know, the public really tune in and do their homework and make sure that we're allocating resources to organizations that are really getting it done in terms of helping to heal and solve the root causes so that, you know, the people that we are helping do make it out into becoming, you know, the most positive, productive people they can be.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more about the social business enterprise model and how this is all working, because it is a combination of private sector, also in teamwork with federal dollars and other state things that are available. And that is a really good mix. But before we talk about that, tell us about the new book called Healing, Real Stories Told by People Who Have Overcome the Homelessness and Opioid Epidemics. Great book. I know that it's available online for about $19.99. Is it on Amazon? Everyone should read this, but tell us about this book. I mean, talk about an inspiring read.
Oh, my God. It is such an inspiring read. You know, I left my career in finance to do something that my family thought, you know, was just too big. Right. It was just this lofty dream of helping the homeless become self-sufficient and independent, which many people didn't believe was possible. So what we did is during the pandemic, as I said, you know, I wish the only way for people to believe what is by seeing. Right. So you say seeing is believing. So the closest thing I can do is come up with a book, which is an anthology. And I invited some of our alums to tell their stories in this book. And each and every one of them tells their story in their own words. And they really share in this book, you know, just the depths of despair that they were in. Each and every story in this book was homeless for more than 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And each and every one of these stories today is living the American dream. They're all supporting themselves, their families, they're reunited with their families, which is amazing. And also, they, you know, many of them even own their own business. Three of the stories in the book are military veterans. And three of them, believe it or not, are actually alums and now employees of my own organization. And they started out, again, you know, being homeless and in crisis. And today they actually are leading departments, you know. And I just think that's super exciting for people to actually see what I get to see every day. And that is the result of our collective efforts in terms of taking the time to really make the investment of talent, you know, resources, in a way that was going to lead people to a path that truly was going to help them, you know, overcome those challenges in a real sustainable way.
And now I hope that when people read the book, I hope that they can see their friends, their neighbors, people they know who can fall on hard times. And we look at something just like the opioid problem. So many people who never would have, I mean, people with good work ethic, people raised right, people with all the right opportunities, but then they get into they have an injury situation. They have to take pain pills. It can sneak up. It's something that we've talked about time and time again on Mike Favia's podcast with different elements of the world that some of these things have touched. And I think that it is a real eye-opener to people as, say, like the homeless are not just, I mean, everyone wants to say the homeless are like, put them in a circle and describe who and what the homeless are. And I think people don't really get that it's all of us that could be in that situation.
Exactly. I always say that. I say the same thing. I'm like, look, this is not a homogenous population. They become homeless for many, many reasons. No one ever set out to become homeless that I've talked to, right? And
right,
they cannot get themselves out of homelessness. They rely on all of us, you know, coming together and helping them get connected to the right services at the right time. I mean, they're in the throes of crisis. And again, you know, especially if they've got their families and their children in tow, it makes it even more difficult. But when you read this book called Healing, you will see people that you know, like you said, they are people that come from all walks of life. They are people that grew up with wealthy families that gave them everything they could ever ask for, and still nothing worked. And, you know, people that never stood a chance since the moment they were born. They were destined to end up in the system and follow in their parents' footsteps. So, again, this is not homogenous population, but it is a community that comes together at a safe haven. And, you know, everyone helps each other, you know, in a way that, you know, really demystifies, you know, the fact that, you know, they're not alone. And there are a lot of people that are going through similar things, and the support that they get from their peers is one of the secret sauces to our organization, is that they start to build long-term relationships with people that are going to support them, not just during this time, but, you know, beyond A Safe Haven. I mean, I have so many of these people that are even featured in this book that we stay in touch with, and they stay in touch with each other because, you know, their success, you know, and the success of others that have gone through the programs, you know, inspire all of us.
It's, you know, and the other thing that I think is inspiring about this for me is that the issue of homelessness, social health, a lot of these issues have in recent years been unfortunately mixed up in the world of politics. And those of us who know that the way to solve a problem and solution is to really take everyone in a holistic and a bipartisan approach to these things. And that's why I like this social business enterprise model where we're not just relying on public funding or attitudes of one, you know, a theory of politics or another on solving these issues. So in this situation, this is really an everybody jump in and work on this approach. So tell us a little bit more about the social business enterprise model and how that makes things different from the traditional approach to homelessness that we always think of maybe as being government dollars, you know, and just a federal, you know, federally funded programs and things that some could criticize and say they don't do the job and don't get it done right. So how is the social business enterprise model, how does it work, and why is it so different, and why is it so effective?
Nick, as I mentioned before, when my husband and I first started looking at this issue, we did look at government agencies and we did look at how our taxpayer dollars were being spent. And we could not find any evidence of any return on our investment or any return on impact in terms of really making a sustainable difference in the lives of people that we were helping. Well-intended programs to feed people, well-intended programs to put people in public housing, but without a strategy behind it that leads people again to independence and self-sufficiency, then we were squandering, you know, the talent that these people had that could have been developed to become, you know, healthy, you know, self-sufficient individuals. So for us, you know, we've been through about six presidential administrations since we started. So no party has the market cornered on poverty. And I think, you know, if we look back in retrospect, you know, we probably can see that we've all made mistakes, you know, throughout the years. Again, misguided, well-intended mistakes of, you know, how we could potentially help people. But it really, I believe, does warrant and desperately needs the engagement of the private sector. You know, like every business person knows, you know, you have to create a business model that produces, you know, solves the problem, right, and produces results, or you're not going to stay in business, right? So as AFC Haven realized that, we wanted to help people become self-sufficient, independent, because our whole value system is around the idea that, of that adage, right, of, you can give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, or you can teach him how to fish and he'll eat for a lifetime. Well, I believe that you can do both, right? And they're not mutually exclusive. Let's help them. Let's feed the people. Let's give them the shelter they need. In the meantime, let's also help them, you know, learn how to become independent and self-sufficient. So every minute, you know, is really well spent and invested in making that happen. So unfortunately, when we first started with this idea of helping people solve their underlying reasons why they're in crisis in the first place, such as addiction, unemployment, lack of education, you know, counseling, psychological help, whatever it is that they needed, so we can solidly work with an individual that was ready to learn and ready to start working on the process of getting their lives back on track. Unfortunately, no doors were opening up for them for jobs. You know, they had to check these boxes, they had bad backgrounds or terrible credit and, you know, checkered past and, you know, no work history. So we realized that we had to create businesses in order for them to actually get a job. So today we own a landscaping company, we own a catering business, and we also own a staffing business, which is doing a phenomenal job helping those employers that are having a really hard time finding people to work in their warehouses or their manufacturing plants and places like that. So those businesses actually are part of our ecosystem at A Safe Haven that contribute to the revenues and the sustainability of the organization. But the best part is they create jobs. They create a way to pay the people that we're putting into these jobs. And as we have them working in our social enterprises, we also teach them how to manage their money. And now they're getting some work experience and a work ethic that we get to observe firsthand and make the great recommendations that they need when they're looking for a job, have something on their resume. And our staffing business is also keeping an eye out for who our superstars are to make sure we get them placed into jobs in mainstream America. So that is just an incredible way to really help people, help build businesses and communities that lack businesses and economic opportunity, and to help generate revenues for the organization in a way that, you know, public funding doesn't meet all of the needs and the costs associated with what we do. So we do rely on the social enterprises for about a third of our revenues, but we also rely on private donations to also cover the gap of the revenues and the resources we need to help people literally, you know, get their lives back on track. So if you want to count our real estate developments as part of our social enterprises, that's an important piece too. So we have a very unique continuum of housing, which I call phased housing. So if you think about senior housing, right, you think about assisted living is for people that have, you know, our seniors, but, you know, they're still pretty independent, may need some a la carte services. But as people age, we have a plan for them to go into, you know, nursing homes or memory care or hospice, right? So think about that, but in reverse. So as people enter our programs, they do enter the most acute level of care, which is our transitional housing program. So there we are assessing people, we're understanding what is going on, we're actually starting to connect them to the right services, whether it's psychological, educational, treatment programs, you know, the list goes on, job training programs, and that's where all of that stuff is really getting assessed and we're getting people connected. But when they're ready, we're able to move them into the next stage of housing that's appropriate for their needs. So some may need supportive housing because they're always going to need a little bit of help every step of the way. Case managers must be on site, but they pretty much live independently. Then we also offer affordable housing where they pretty much live on their own and they're just paying rent just like everybody else. Or some of them may need some subsidies, like a mother of five might need some help. And then we also have senior housing and veteran housing. So the goal is for us not just to help people become, independent and self-sufficient and not be homeless anymore, but we also want to prevent them from becoming homeless again. So once they're in our systems, all of our property managers are actually trained professionals are tuned in to if they see a tenant, you know, who may need a little help along the way, we're there for them to help mitigate it from becoming catastrophic again.
Wow. I just, all the pieces that are moving together, and you explain it very well. And this has been going on for, you know, like you said, since 1994 when you all started. So my next question, Mike Fabia, whose firm sponsors this podcast, he's on the board there at A Safe Haven. I know that there's a run coming up. What are some of the things that the organization does to boost awareness, and how can people who want to get involved? Like, let's say we've got a doctor's office out there who's listening and saying, I want to help some of these people too. How can they get involved? I suppose everyone can help in some way.
Oh my God. Well, you just mentioned someone who stepped up, oh my God, over 10 years ago, Mike Fabia. Michael Fabia is an attorney and he took a special interest in our cause, especially as on behalf of the work that we're doing for the military veterans. And he joined our board. And has been very instrumental in helping us, you know, and address many, many issues throughout the many years that we've been doing this work. And I just want to give him a lot of credit, too, for supporting our efforts to open up a COVID-19 medical respite when it seemed very, very scary to do that. You know, he was one of the board members who actually supported our efforts to open up a COVID-19 medical respite for the homeless. So as the homeless, you know, obviously, we're going to get COVID. We had to prepare for that and make a place that was going to be conducive medically and for behavioral health care reasons appropriate for them. So since last year of April 2020, we opened up a medical respite that has helped over 700 homeless who were COVID positive that not only got their medical needs met, but also their behavioral health care needs met, and were discharged to, you know, a much more appropriate level of care on the back end. So we have so many stories that have come out of being COVID positive that came out healthy and now have been introduced to the rest of our programs that today are people that were homeless, believe it or not, Nick, for over 25 years that are now working, that are now supporting themselves. So that could not have happened without Mike, you know, giving us his solid support, making sure that, you know, we were going to have his backing and going after what at the time was perceived as very, very high risk, you know, proposition. So what I invite others to consider is that what is the talent, what is the skill set that they have? Everyone can be a part of the solution. We're doing a virtual run walk to end homelessness this Saturday, starting on the 18th or the 25th. We're grateful to have a lot of businesses that have sponsored this event and invited their workforce and their employees, even their friends and neighbors, to join their team and to get out there and, you know, do the footwork that it takes to get the attention that we need from our decision makers, because this is a movement that does rely on all of us, the public, to be their voice. You're never going to see the homeless, you know, go out there and rally and protest and march and riot, you know, whatever it is they got to do to get the attention, you know. So it's incumbent on all of us to be that voice and those advocates for them. So just signing up for this run walk goes a long way. You can do it individually if you like. But then throughout the year, there's always needs. If you're having, I just did a golf outing last week with the Chicago Association of Realtors, and they chose ASAP Haven as their charitable partner, and they raised thousands of dollars to help us, you know, get the awareness and the support that we need for helping the homeless. They see the writing on the wall with what's happening with the pandemic in terms of the aftermath and how many people are truly facing evictions and, you know, and cannot make up for all the damage that's been done, you know, financially and mentally to so many families right now. So they were on board. So I think that one of the great things about ASAP Haven is that we're as creative as the as our volunteers and our supporters want to be. You know, if they have an idea or we want to help them bring it to fruition, whether it's doing a drive, whether it's participating and sponsoring a run, whether it's, you know, hosting an event and making ASAP Haven your charitable partner, or just, you know, making a simple donation, you know, that goes a long way too, or joining our board or advisory board. I mean, those are opportunities that we welcome, you know, people from, again, you know, lots of different backgrounds, lawyers, you know, doctors, you know, real estate professionals, every industry can, you know, can be represented. And consider how their field and their associations can be a part of this big humanitarian crisis and making sure that we get this right this time. We cannot leave it all to government to figure it out by themselves. If they could have figured it out, they would have done it by now. So we need help.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, too. I think that as far as support goes, if I were in the neighborhood, I'm not in the neighborhood, but if I was and I had a law firm or a practice with people, I'd want to say, let's do some volunteer hours. It's sort of like one time I did the Habitat for Humanity and, you know, tearing down the, demoing the old stuff and getting ready for the new cabinets coming in. And it felt really, really good. Are there volunteer opportunities that groups of people can get together and pitch in and help with different things?
Yes, it's starting to open up now. Unfortunately, with the COVID-19, we had to shut down all on-site volunteer opportunities. And, you know, we still are, according to CDC, required to wear masks, you know, in congregate settings. So we're slowly starting to roll out, opening up volunteer opportunities. But there are things, again, people can do from a distance, such as drives, you know, and fundraising and charitable events and, you know, doing this run. So for now, I would say let's just keep those ideas in mind and stay tuned. Follow us on social media. And, you know, as we start to announce, you know, the opening of more on-site opportunities. In the meantime, also buying that book. The healing book, all proceeds to the book are going to help ASAP Haven continue to do the work that we're doing. So that's another way people can help. Buy it as a gift idea. You know, for any
that
are coming up.
Well, I hate to sound opportunist about the volunteer things, but as someone who works in PR and, you know, PR for law firms and different organizations and social media and all that, people are always looking for a thing to have their team go out and do something good in the community. And I've been in situations where people say, I don't know where to go or what to do with that. And there's all sorts of people out there who could use a helping hand and, you know, go out there and do something that actually matters. And, you know, a lot of folks think that problems like homelessness, opioid epidemic and veterans issues are just such big problems that how can any one person or any small group of people make a difference when it's such a big problem? But the answer is by saying yes and getting going and put one foot in forward of the other and just get out there and do something. So I feel very good that ASAP Haven is there, and I hope that other people take a look at how a private sector approach with the teamwork of federal opportunities and state dollars that are there can really get the work done on a meaningful level. And seeing the proof, I'm telling you, that's proof in the pudding when you can have a book with these people telling their stories and they are community leaders themselves.
Absolutely. And I just cannot thank you enough, Nick, because you are using your platform to help us get the word out. And that's a huge way of helping and making a difference. I mean, more than you know. I don't know who's going to be out there listening to this message, But I guarantee you there's someone that's going to hear this call and they're going to say, now that's the type of organization I want to partner with, I want to get involved with. Or they're going to say, now that's the type of organization, I know someone that needs them and I'm going to call them right now. And, our response is going to be yes, because of the support that's coming out of the woodwork for this issue finally. You know, I'm going to be giving a talk next week in Denver on the topic of environmental and social and governance issues at an Opportunity Zone conference. And for the first time ever, you know, we talk a lot about the environment, right? And very rarely do we talk about poverty and homelessness and something that's happening right at our doorstep every day. And, you know, I go to this conference, and as we talk about the environment, I always say I'm here to represent the other non-renewable resource called human beings.
Right, exactly.
I think it's, you know, we're finally getting the stars aligned, you know, where we're finally starting to think about the idea that it all matters, the environment, the social, and economic opportunities, and even the governance, you know, of how do our companies run in a way where they're consciously, you know, their social responsibility mission is really executing and measuring the impact that they're making on the communities that desperately need, you know, everyone's support. So I'm pretty excited right now that we have a moment that I strongly worry. My biggest fear is that we're going to squander it, but hopefully not, you know, because as more people find out about the fact that there are real solutions out there that should be and can be scaled and replicated. You know, another thing people can do is, you know, we're very good about going out and voting. You know, and I think that's what makes America great, right, that we're very active in our democracy. But we also have to hold our leaders accountable, you know, to making sure that they're living up to meeting the needs of the people that don't have a voice and aren't considered a strong voter base, you know, or a base that's going to make contributions to their campaigns. So I encourage everyone to call their local elected officials and to have them, you know, take a look at this issue. And if they like what we're doing, say, tell them to take a look at what A Safe Haven is doing and invite us to come and give a presentation to their leadership. We're out there. We're ready to help, you know, and we're expanding into other markets right now as we speak. We are, you know, expanding here in the Chicagoland area, but also into Indiana. And that's only happening because of the advocacy of the public, and specifically in Indiana, the veterans community that has gone out and really, really advocated for having A Safe Haven open up in their communities, which is, you know, a huge, you know, help to all of us in making sure that, you know, these veterans and people in crisis don't get overlooked. And we are bringing them, you know, world-class services in a way that's going to help solve and heal the root causes, because you never know who's going to need our help. And, you know, I will tell you that, believe it or not, even our own organization has helped family members that we never thought in a million years would have needed our help, and they did. So thank God we're able to do that for them.
I think that one thing that we saw with coronavirus and all the shutdowns is that I don't care who you are and what your business is, you can be sidelined and affected by the world. And it is of no fault of your own, and things just happen. And I'll tell you, when you're talking about outreach, it just reminds me of the Blues Brothers movie where he says, we're on a mission from God. We're out here to put the good word in the streets, and that's what you all are doing. I just absolutely love it. The book sounds great. Tell us how we can get a copy of the book.
Well, the healing book by myself, Nellie Vasquez Roland, is you know, stories told by real people who have overcome the homeless and the opiate epidemics, can be found on almost every retail outlet today. It started out on Amazon, and it became a bestseller within weeks, and it's now available in almost every major retail outlet. So you can go online, order it online, and believe it or not, you know, every dollar that, you know, is comes in as a result of purchasing this book goes straight to the cause. And I cannot be more grateful to those that were courageous enough to share their stories to help, you know, continue to, you know, give an incredible inspirational story for people to understand how people become homeless. Again, there are people from all walks of life. And, you know, how bad it got. I mean, there's one story of a woman that was homeless for 36 years that was arrested 120 times, OD'd over 100 times throughout those years. He had five children throughout those years, never raised them, was estranged from her family for 20 years and in prison 7 times. I mean, how bad can it get, right? And living on the street.
Whoa, yeah.
And today she's like, you know, an amazing individual, paying it forward and supporting herself, reunited with her whole family, and just super, super happy to be able to tell her story. And each and every one of them, just, you know, you just feel their energy when you read this book, and you just can't help but have, you know, happy tears at the end of every story.
Right, and, right.
I hope that, you know, we need to get this book in the hands of anyone who needs to read, you know, and realize that no matter how bad it gets, you know, there is a place that they can get help, and there are people that care. And you know, and I think that with what happened with the pandemic, even though you didn't get COVID-19, almost everyone in one way or another was impacted by the stress and the mental health that, you know, is a consequence of having to deal with this isolation and the ordeal of, you know, of not knowing, you know, whether or not you're going to have a job, not knowing how you're going to make the rent, you know, not knowing, you know, what's going to happen, you know, especially as we had so much unrest happening around the world, everyone was touched by it. So I do believe that, you know, mental health is on the rise, especially among our youth. And the sooner you read this book, the sooner you're going to understand, you know, how important it is to get together and support, you know, models and programs that are designed to foster success so that they don't end up cycling in and out of the system for 30 years and then, you know, have to try to make up for lost time.
Yeah, well.
You know, after fact. And that is if they survive. So, you know, I do feel that, you know, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I have a huge sense of urgency right now to make sure that everyone understands that this has got to be a collective effort. And if we don't do it now, I don't know if we'll ever have a second chance at this.
So important work and such a positive message. For those who want to get in touch and learn more, what do you recommend? How do they be in touch and what should they do?
Well, I highly recommend that people actually go to our website, acehaven.org, and that they sign up for our newsletter and stay in touch on social media. And I'm also looking for social media ambassadors. I mean, everyone who's on social media can like, comment, share. As we know, it's all about algorithms, you know, and the more people do that and chime in, and the more attention, you know, we're going to bring to this issue. And I think that, you know, we need to galvanize, you know, everyone, you know, and in the way that they feel comfortable, either a little or a lot. So go to our website, you know, there's a donate button on the website, you know, give. And by doing everything I just suggested, you're going to find lots of ways throughout the year that you can get involved. And you can always shoot me an email. I mean, my email is real simple. It's Nellie@acehaven.org. And I respond to everyone's emails. And if there's more you'd like to know on how you can get involved, including board and advisory board ideas, you know, let me know. We're looking for evangelists who can help us get the word out.
Awesome. I can't wait to see this continue. And I can say, I knew them back when it started.
My dream.
All right. Well, keep.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely. All right. Well, keep the good work up. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, I was just going to close with my dream is exactly that, is that someday we will see an safe haven in every city and every state that needs it so that we don't have people end up living on the streets. We can get to them before, you know, the situations become catastrophic, and that's totally doable. It's just a matter of our public and political will making it happen. So thank you so much again, Nick. This is wonderful talking to you, and thank you again for helping us spread the word.
All right. Well, and thank you also for Michael V. Fabian Associates for being the program sponsor. It puts this program together and shares it. Please do check out the Fabia Law Firm for all your health care law, licensing, and litigation needs. And again, do check out the book Healing, Real Stories Told by People Who've Overcome the Homeless and Opioid Epidemics. Thank you again, Nellie. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Nick. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now.